I'm Chris Farrell from the official GunnaGeek.com podcast, a proud member of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're listening to now. The opinions expressed are those of each individual. Check out all the other geeky podcasts over at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in 3, 2, 1.
How's it going, everybody, and welcome to the Audibly
Exquisite Podcast, episode 89. I'm Mike Norn with
Peter Melnick.
And Peter Melnick, tell the good folks at home what we're all about.
What Audibly Exquisite is all about is we are your one-stop source for all things geek culture, be it movies, television, video games, comic books, you name it, we're gonna cover it.
You stole my line, Pete.
Sorry.
We're gonna cover it.
There we go. So, also, we are brought to you by the Gunna Geek Podcast Network, where you can listen and view all sorts of geeky goodness at www.gunnageek.com. And you can also support this show at on patreon.com/audiblyexquisite. And through a tiered variety program, you can help support this here fine program for as low as $2 a month to as high as $50 a month. So, once again, patreon.com/audiblyexquisite. You can find us on social media at facebook.com/audiblyexquisite. Give us a like ski on there. Go on the Twitter at the AE Podcast. Myself at Peter Melnick, and yourself
at Buckaroo_Mike.
And you can find us on Instagram at audiblyexquisite. You can find us on the worldwide interwebs at www.audiblyexquisite.com. And you can find a wide variety of ways to listen to this show through your mobile devices out there. For iOS and Android, you can be able to listen to the show on TuneIn Radio, Stitcher Radio, and Podomatic.
You're right.
And it's also, I believe, you can just, you know, find different podcasting RSS feed thingies, whatever, but you can usually listen to the show on most of them. And also, when you're on iTunes, if you're listening to the show through iTunes or whatever, go to iTunes and rate, review, subscribe, and share. Spread the word like Nutella, people. And please, 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 tell people about this show.
Please.
And now, by the way, at the end of this here fine program, we are finally going to be dropping an interview that I conducted back at New York Comic Con all the way back in October. So it is with legendary Marvel writer Chris Claremont. He was the architect for the X-Men title for over 15 years, people. 15 years.
Jeez.
Got his start on...
Was he married?
He was on X-Men number... I want to say 94 all the way to 278 or 79, I want to say. But he lasted that long. He lasted from 1975-ish until 1991. And, you know, he's why the X-Men titles are so beloved. And, you know, as a matter of fact, I'm going to be giving my take at the end of this episode on the X-Men series that just relaunched. They got X-Men Prime. That was like the big reset for them and everything, because they just did Inhumans versus X-Men, Death of X, yada, yada, yada. And now they have a clean slate, so they're going through with X-Men Prime. That starts it all out, lets you know what the hell's going on. And then they're branching that out into two new team books, X-Men Blue, X-Men Gold. They're doing a new Cable series, I think. They're doing Weapon X with Logan and Domino and all them. And Cable, or no, just a shit ton of things. But once again, stay tuned for the end of this episode to listen to the interview with Chris Claremont. He actually gives his thoughts on the upcoming, potentially, Gambit movie. So now, Mike, a lot has happened since the last episode that you and I did last week. Let's touch base. Let's see what's been happening in the world of geek culture.
I know something good.
Well, Mike, we both saw it. It was amazing. It was spectacular.
Sensational.
It was sensational. It was Marvel Team-Up. It was Ultimate. Let's see, what other titles could we go with? It was Avenging.
Uncle Ben's Dead.
It was The Lost Chapters. Anyway, a Spider-Man trailer came out for Spider-Man Homecoming. Mike, what did you think of it?
It was cool.
I dug it a lot. I thought
I think it's going to be a lot more comedic than the past Spider-Man movies.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, I mean, lighthearted, if that makes any sense.
It's got Marvel. It's got Marvel's juices in there and everything. They know what they're doing. You know, Kevin Feige and all that. And I like what they're doing with this trailer, but, you know, I'm still not that excited. Like, I'm still more excited for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, yeah, me too.
But
they don't have a killer soundtrack yet.
It does. We don't even know, by the way, what the Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack is. And as of this recording,
Fox on the Run is one of them.
Well, no, we know what some songs are going to be, but the track listing hasn't been released. Nothing, even a pre-order for it. And the movie is getting
close. When's that coming out?
A month from now.
Hmm.
Yeah. So we knew the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 1 soundtrack like 2 months before the movie came out.
So they're going to have to do one soon.
And I know some stuff, like if you look around and see the toys and stuff like that, like they have, you know, music toys and stuff like that. I like how we're going away from Spider-Man, but we'll go right back to it. We promise. Like if you get the Walkman, like the fake, you know, toy MP3 boombox Walkman, you push a button and Jay and the Americans Come a Little Bit Closer plays. They have a Dancing Groot toy that plays Flashlight by Parliament.
That's cool.
So there's a lot of stuff like that that's really neat. But anyway, going away from then, going over to Spidey, I like the trailer. A lot of people are, you know, complaining, oh no, we know so much about the movie. Yes, we know so much of the movie based on...
Yes, because how'd that boat get broken?
A two-minute trailer. Man, they could have just cut that off by like, you know, maybe 3 seconds. It's such a long movie of 2 minutes.
Michael Keaton was in it.
I thought, you know, seeing him in there...
It's surreal seeing Michael Keaton in like another big movie like this.
I think it's weird seeing Michael Keaton when he's so synonymous with DC still.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see him, you know, thrown over to the other competition.
He's Batman.
Yeah. We have Batman becoming another kind of winged creature.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm excited for this, but...
I hope he uses like a line or a similar line, like, let's get nuts or something.
They really are like hammering home, though, the imagery of Spider-Man as this... Not kid, but like this Christ-like figure.
Mm-hmm.
If you notice, when he's like pulling the boat,
oh yeah,
the boat together, he's doing the on the cross pose.
Who did that?
Anyway, but I think the idea, like they're really trying to hammer that home. Like he is what Marvel is synonymous with.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. When you think of Marvel, who do you really think of? Him and Captain America.
Oh yeah,
that's really about it.
I'm gonna say NHL Super Pro.
Yeah, obviously NFL Super Pro.
Oh, NFL. Sorry, I got NHL stuck in my head.
But, you know, I mean, like, a lot of these characters, they're just, you know, whatever. They're like window dressing. Like, I mean, in the 90s, you thought of Wolverine, but not so much anymore.
Yeah, you're right.
If we're being honest.
Yeah, we're talking about the way here today.
So, I don't know. I mean, I like what they're doing with Homecoming, but I'm not, you know...
In love.
I'm not going rah, rah, rah about it, even though the funniest thing is this. Deadpool is my favorite Marvel character, but Spider-Man is my favorite superhero. So kind of think about how I feel where I'm tired of these movies as it is.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to go into it. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to go see the movie. I'm not blown away right now by it. And, you know, like a lot of talk is going on about, you know, Spider-Man Homecoming. They just did this convention, a cinema convention the other week, and Amy Pascal of Sony was talking about this, and she made a comment. Mike, entertain the fans for a little bit while I pull up Amy's quote.
So, fun fact, fans. When the Egyptians built the pyramids, they built them on these certain points of the earth where the sun produces mass amounts of static electricity. So, essentially, theoretically speaking, of course, they could have used the static electricity to produce electric currents, to produce light, and other various things, because, you know, they had copper wiring, so they used the copper to, you know, conduct the electricity, and, you know, it would power, you know, copper conducts electricity.
And I got the quote.
Okay, so, here we go. Back to Pete.
This is what she said in the video, which you can find online, yada, yada, yada. One of the things that I think is so amazing about this experience is that you don't have studios deciding to work together to make a film very often. In fact, it may never happen again after we do the sequel. Because Sony and Disney and Marvel all decided that the right thing to do was to allow Peter Parker and Spider-Man to be in the MCU and to work with the Marvel guys and have them produce the film. And I think that was a very rare thing for three companies to do and a very brilliant thing for them to decide to do, because there are only so many stories you know you can tell again and again and again about Spidey. And this is something we would never be able to do in any other way. So it was a very selfless thing that was very smart on the part of all of the companies. So now everyone is in a fucking tizzy. I was in a tizzy when I initially read it, and I read a comment on Reddit. So somebody made a point, and it's true. She says, this is something that'll never happen again after the sequel. what people are thinking she means is he's not going to leave, meaning this will never happen again. You'll never see studios work together to bring a character into the fold like they're doing with this. Like, we probably will never see the X-Men brought over into the MCU. Mm-hmm. But she's going on, like, people are saying, you know, they're going to try and, you know, kick Spider-Man out after, like, after the sequel to Homecoming. I don't see that happening because realistically,
cha-ching.
Yeah, a lot of fucking money. Would you, if you were
Spider-Man,
if you were in Sony's shoes, would you be like, ah, gee, Rick? No, we'll be talking about that later on, by the way. But yeah, a lot of people are, you know, would you, if you were in Sony's shoes, would you sacrifice that because you're making money with Marvel?
It's guaranteed money.
It's a license to print money. It's like,
look,
it's
at
a cliche
their track
to
record
say.
Their Spider-Man movies, and look at Marvel's track record with anything they put out so far.
Yeah, I mean, I like it.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's...
It would be like selling your whole pasta recipe for $1,000, or make the pasta and make thousands and thousands of dollars throughout time.
I just don't understand what, you know, why people... Like, I understand why people are freaking out, but you really shouldn't, you know, just cool your jets. You know what
cool
I mean?
Cool your stuff.
Exactly. So now, I mean, if they do it, they do it. But if they don't, they don't. But I do want to still see them doing this. You know what I mean? I want to see Spidey a part of this. And I do hope Amy is wrong in the sense that we will see another studio do something like that again. Because how cool would that be to see the Fantastic Four brought over into the Marvel Cinematic Universe while cooperating with Fox?
Absolutely. 100% amazing.
Fox would do it.
Cha-ching. Right there and there.
I want to see the Fantastic Four properly utilized on film, but...
They would look beautiful. On, like, MCU.
I don't think it'll happen for a long, long time, though.
Nah.
Now, I mean, if you were Marvel with this, who would you want to bring in from the other companies? Like, more importantly, who would you want to bring in more?
Wolverine.
But would you bring him along with the X-Men, or would you be bring... like?
You would have to bring the X-Men. I think the way you would have to do it is bring the X-Men, then Wolverine.
So you would be down with them just bringing in...
Let everybody know, yes, Wolverine is coming, but not yet.
Right.
It's kind of like you make them pay to play, basically.
Right.
Be like, yeah, if this movie does well, then we'll bring Wolverine in. That's why everyone's going to be like, oh, they're getting Wolverine. No, let's go see the movie. They're bringing Wolverine in.
I'm genuinely
then
surprised.
Then you have a little teaser at the end of the credits, boom, Wolverine.
I'm genuinely surprised they haven't done anything with this, like for, you know, attempting to do this.
I think after the next Infinity War movie, we're going to see, if so, we will see the connection to the X-Men.
The problem is this. What could be the next big bad that Marvel has the rights to? You know what I mean? We like
X-Men versus Avengers.
No, I'm talking about that have the rights
like
to.
Like villain.
Yeah, like who is the next big bad?
They don't have nobody really.
Like, I'm fine if they, like, you know, negotiated and, like, the end of fucking Infinity War. You know what you see? The big, stupid purple helmet. Oh, fuck, Galactus is coming.
I mean, I can think of one villain.
But I don't know. There's a lot of, you know, characters they could utilize. Like, Doctor Doom would be great.
Oh, yeah.
But are they
great? Mandarin. Like, actual Mandarin.
He could have been him that whole time.
Or, yeah, exactly. Could have him been playing a character.
I mean, Ben Kingsley is a good actor.
I've been Mysterio.
Booyaka Booyaka with the headbutting children?
Yeah. Can you imagine if that ended up being Mysterio?
I'd be down with that. I think that could work.
Hey, it's me, Mysterio. He said he's an actor.
Jumping out the sky?
Yeah.
R-E-Y Mysterio? Here we go. I just did a spoken word version of Rey Mysterio's theme song.
You did.
Look at me go. But I don't know. I mean, I just think the idea, you know, that the next big bad has to have importance. You know what I mean? And when you think about it, you know, Thanos, whatever, tomato, tomato. I just don't think he, years ago, he would not have been a big deal like he is now.
They're making him a big deal.
They made him into a great
Unless
big
you make
deal.
An original villain, but that would be lame.
It would be lame.
Because there'd be no hype, you know what I mean? Like, oh, we're bringing Galactus. Holy shit, Galactus.
What about Fing Fang Foom? Or Fin Fang Foom?
I don't think he would sell.
It's literally a fucking dragon.
Yeah.
With purple pants on.
Yeah, it wouldn't sell.
I don't know. I don't know if it could work, if it couldn't work. That's the problem.
I should make him pantless. Does have a big old...
Just giant dragon dick.
Flip it around. Do you think it shoots flames?
Well, I mean, you know, when you get the clap, maybe. I don't know. I don't fucking know. But, yeah, I mean, I like the idea of, you know, seeing, like, that kind of monster that the guys could fight. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it could be, you know, in the Guardians of the Galaxy, and I'm a really shitty Guardians of the Galaxy fan for saying this, but I forgot their name, but the really, really tall guys that have the staffs.
Yeah.
Fight them. I don't fucking care.
Big staff guys.
Yeah, big staff guys that, you know, Jack Kirby made. I don't fucking know. But do that. Do something cool like that. But will it happen, you know?
Time will tell, Pete.
I just think a lot of these characters, you need somebody that can have an impact.
Yeah.
And if these characters, you know...
Unlike TNA, which won't have any impact at all.
Hashtag fuck that owl. But anyway, I don't know. I like the idea to a degree of bringing, you know, a new villain, an original villain, but it is hard because, you know, you need something that'll, like, catch the attention of the audience. You know what I mean? I still think the idea of, like, a Magneto would have been cool.
Oh, purple suit and all.
That would have been awesome, but, you know, such is life. We're not going to get that. But if they do it, how fucking rad would it be to see Doctor Doom?
Oh, God. Amazing. Magneto and Doom.
Because you could do a team-up movie where, you know, like, Doctor Doom has to become a good guy briefly, redo, you know, the fucking Doctor... Like, vaguely base it off of, what's it called?
Now, do you think the...
Hold on. Based it off of, what the fuck is it called? Doctor Doom, Doctor Strange, Torment and Triumph.
There you go.
Go with something like that, you know?
Well, I heard a rumor that the third season of Daredevil is going to be tied in with the Infinity War somehow.
Really? Like, how?
They didn't say. It was just, like, speculation right now, I think.
Do you think it's going to be kind of like how they did, you know, in Daredevil with The Incident?
Yeah, they're probably going to call it The War.
You think so?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, in all honesty...
Or if they're involved, they'll be like, yeah, remember that shit that happened?
Pretty much.
That was crazy. Hey, Luke Cage.
I mean, it's... That universe is the same one as the one... Again, I will always go with this. The world that has Jessica Jones and Daredevil is the same world that has Rocket Raccoon and fucking Groot.
Yeah, I think we say that at least once every time we have an episode.
Well, I mean, it's the truth. It's a weird connection. You know what
well,
I mean?
Iron Fist made a Hulk reference.
Did he?
Yeah. You're like, you got more views on YouTube than the big, incredible green guy.
Wow.
But like, just please say Hulk. Please, just say the Hulk.
Well, they want it to be very subtle. You know what yeah. I mean? Which I can understand. Mm. I can honestly understand that. But I mean, I don't know. I like what they're doing with this, though. So fingers crossed, you know, if they do that, it's smart.
And did you know Stan Lee's made cameos in all the Marvel shows?
Yeah, but like as a little picture
yeah,
and stuff like that.
Pictures off in the distance. It surprised me.
I dig that. I think that's a smart cameo decision as opposed to like, you know, Excelsior, true believers.
Oh, look, I'm getting a drink.
Oh, I'm getting blown.
Hey,
this is a TVMA show.
Hey, look, a hookah.
Anyway. But yeah, I mean, I like the idea.
The Punisher just has him getting sniped, his head blown off.
Jesus Christ.
Old Stanley's head just turns into a fucking jar of jelly.
Speaking of a jar of jelly, Joss Whedon, but Joss Whedon is currently in negotiations with Warner Brothers and DC Comics to possibly write, direct, and produce a Batgirl film.
So he's got his foot in the door.
Well, this guarantees one thing at least. We'll at least have a decent film in the DCEU.
Remember months ago, I said they need to bring somebody like Joss Whedon in. You're like, nah, they never will.
I still stand by that for the fact of he's too loyal to Marvel, but evidently money does talk. And I mean, in the past, he has said he's worked with DC. He was supposed to do the Wonder Woman film originally.
That's right.
Years ago.
I'm glad he's got his foot in the door, though, because that could mean good things.
It could mean great things. But the thing is, will it actually happen? Unfortunately, him and DC is kind of like Guillermo del Toro and everything.
Crap.
So he always says he's going to do something with DC and it never comes to fruition, which is a shame. And it's something that, you know...
Can you imagine if he's actually the guy making the next Batman movie?
Us as fans, we need that. Yeah. We need somebody, you know, who has a proven track record, but apparently, oh, he'll just make everything funny and he'll push his feminist agenda, blah, 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 blah. Who gives a shit? At least it's a fucking good movie.
It's not working now, whatever they're doing.
Oh, come on. We need drab color and we need, you know, one emotion actors.
And superheroes aren't called their names. The Bat.
The Bat of Gotham.
The Aqua Guy. No, wait. What did he call him?
Roman Reigns?
No. What did Batman call him in the trailer? The Aquaman. The Aquatic Man or something like that.
The Man of Water.
They probably could call Flash Really Fast Guy.
Run super fast.
The Bolt.
See, I kind of like that, to be honest.
They'd probably call Wonder Woman... Tough girl.
Armor boobs. Anyway,
armor boobs.
I don't know. I mean, I like that DC is finally starting to do some decisions that make sense and are actually things fans have wanted for years. Mm-hmm. It's bordering on fan service, but it's still kind of cool, you know?
Yeah.
Like right now, they just released a trailer for it for, what's it called? Batman and Harley Quinn. It's going to be a DC animated film, and it's actually
the style of Batman animated series.
Yeah, the New Adventures of Batman and Robin. Unfortunately, the original voice of Harley is not going to be in it, but it's going to be the one who did the voice in, you know, the Arkham games. Which, to be honest, I'm fine with.
I'm surprised they didn't get Tara Strong to do it.
She doesn't do it anymore because of her voice. Because it hurts her voice badly. So,
oh, well.
It, you know, such is life. You know, it happens.
Harley Quinn's character, voice doesn't make the person.
Exactly. Well, sometimes.
Kevin Conroy.
I listen to it a little bit, and it does sound a little bit off. It's like wrong-sounding Muppets. But, you know, I don't know.
Imagine if they had, like, a British guy doing Batman's voice instead of Kevin Conroy.
I would dig it, you know?
Hello there, Harley Quinn.
I think they could pull something stupid off with that, but it'd be funny.
Horrible voice impressions that piss people off.
This is true. But I mean, you know, why not? Why not go for something stupid like that? It would make me laugh.
We should just take a movie and just dub our own voices over it.
You want to go for it?
Which movie do you want to do?
Gone with the Wind.
I knew you were going to say that, you bastard.
How?
Because I just did. Something I was going to say Gone with the Wind also. That's fucking weird.
Frankly, my mic, I don't give a shit.
Whatever, Pete. Eat it.
Okay. But anyway. So, since the last episode, Rogue One hit digital streaming, and it also finally this past week got released on home video, so Blu-ray and DVD. I actually got a copy of it. Been watching it. I actually, if I'm being honest...
You Benoit-itching
it? Yeah. The first thing I watched in the movie, what do you think it was? That scene at the very end with Darth Vader. And yeah, it's still just as cool as the first time I saw it. Like, that really was a holy shit, this is actually happening kind of moment. Like, it was the definition of fan service, but to be completely honest, when it comes to Darth Vader, we've needed that for years. Like, show Darth Vader really being a badass instead of like a 50-year-old man fencing. You know what I mean? I'm sorry.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry. It's not fucking believable, man.
No.
But. Anyway,
I wonder, though, if they're going to make more Vader movies, though.
We'll get to that.
That's a topic? It is a topic,
but we'll get to that in a minute. But what's going on right now is, you know, with Rogue One, they actually were talking about it. That movie was actually supposed to be the pitch for a Star Wars TV show about getting, you know, the plot to the plans of the Death Star. And that's cool. But could that have worked as a TV series?
I don't know.
I really don't think so. Because, like... You eventually have to get to an end point, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's better just to do it as a one-and-done kind of movie.
Yeah, it would have been too drawn out, I think. Especially know how it's going to end. Be like, okay, we're dragging on this show for season after season to know what happens.
And you end up developing a relationship with the characters. Mm-hmm. And so when they eventually get killed off at the end, you feel like shit. It's like a really bummer of an ending.
It's like in Walking Dead when, you know, characters have been on the show so long, they get killed, which we'll get to later.
Yeah, we will. But I don't know, I mean... I like what they're doing with some of the Star Wars properties, but I think down the line it is going to be interesting seeing where they go with some of these characters, because what's going to happen? You know, we're actually seeing characters get killed off in canon now.
Yeah.
We saw Han Solo get killed off. We saw Darth Maul got killed off in Star Wars Rebels. Spoilers, sorry people, but whatever. I don't know. I just think, you know, overall, there's going to be a lot of cool stuff in the Star Wars, you know, canon and mythos and all that. And one of them is right now Hayden Christensen might be in discussion down the line to do a live action Darth Vader film.
See?
And I'm surprised they have not done this. Like we don't really know what happened to him before, you know, the Clone War or the Rebels cartoon and all that.
Then and now.
Yeah, because I want to see some Darth Vader stories while, you know, Luke is still a little kid, like a little baby.
Yeah, you know what I mean? They did some kind of crossover things in the comics.
But those are the non-canon comics.
Yeah.
So, and the only thing in the comics right now is literally, I want to say, the Darth Vader comic is sometime before, but not much. I don't know. I think the idea, though, the fact a Darth Vader series hasn't happened, like, if it was you, would you do a Star Wars Darth Vader TV series?
No.
I think it could work as an animated one, to be honest.
Maybe an animated, but not like a live action.
Because even more, you could rely on, you know, the whole flips and shit like mm-hmm. that of the character. Because, you know, as opposed to, again, once again, like as I said, a 50-year-old man fencing.
Yeah.
You know, I like the idea of seeing that. I think that could work. Although, you know, how much can, if going with the Hayden Christensen thing, how much is it really going to be him? Because it's Darth fucking Vader. It's a guy in a mask.
Exactly.
Are you hearing, you know, interior monologues from him?
That'd be interesting.
I don't know. I mean, it's very iffy. Although, I do want to see the visual, you know, like, how sad was it in Rogue One when you saw him in that back-to-tank thing?
Gross.
It was so fucking depressing. Like, just...
They should have, like, a little rubber duck floating around in there.
I don't know. I mean, it just bummed me out seeing that, you know? Although, it would have been great with, rubber ducky, you're the one.
To see him in there playing with rubber... Oh, what the fuck? You need a knock. I wasn't playing with my rubber duck.
Is he going to fucking turn into Dark Helmet from Spaceballs? Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I like the idea, but fingers crossed something good happens with this because I want to see Hayden get his redemption for this. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because he got shitted on for so much. His career went borderline bad for this. He needs a resurgence. And if anything, Disney would do it. And they have the proper directors. We could get decent takes this time as opposed to, I don't like sand. It's rough. It's coarse. And it gets,
all right. Sounds good.
God, what the fuck was wrong with George for that? I'm sorry.
Maybe he was doing a bunch of peyote or something.
I understand the whole ass. Like, it's not the whole George Lucas raped my childhood bullshit. I don't care about that. Whatever. But as a creative type to another, where the fuck do you think that's a good take? Where in that delivery did you think, I'm going to go with that take right there.
They killed younglings. All right. Perfect.
I don't know. It's whatever. But... fingers crossed something works out with this. But Now speaking of things that worked out, April Fool's Day, I messaged you. I messaged a lot of other people. I actually heard it from a friend of mine who very well may be doing the show one day. My friend John Hinton, really nice guy. I want to have him on just to, you know, talk about DC and stuff. I think he'd be a fun one to have on. But he actually posted on Facebook, this is not an April Fool's Day joke. Warning, this is not an April Fool's Day joke. The premiere of Robot Chicken. Wow, I fucked that up instantaneously. Rick and Morty is online, and it's streaming until midnight on repeat. Go over there, and he was not fucking with me. And like I said on his post, not all heroes wear capes.
Nope.
Man.
They wear lab coats.
Overall, what did you think of the guerrilla-style season premiere of Rick and Morty? And think about it. That is the most Rick and Morty thing. Have its premiere guerrilla style on April Fool's Day.
I thought it was awesome. It was action-packed.
I liked it a lot. There's already, you know, a lot of jokes going on the internet about it. And we'll get to that one, because it got beaten like a dead fucking horse pretty fucking fast. But I liked it for a lot of the lines. Like, it showed they haven't missed a beat. Even though, you know, the show's only been off air, you know, technically on hiatus for like a year and a half, something like that. Or as Mr. Poopy Butthole said, you know, It may take forever. It may take even longer. We don't know. By the way, talking to somebody about like the Rick and Morty pop vinyls I mentioned to somebody I found, you know, that I'm like, the show is so good, you know, and they take such goofy characters. And I talked about Mr. Poopy Butthole like he was a serious character. And just watching everyone's reaction to me saying the words Mr. Poopy Butthole is one of the funniest things. I recommend doing it yourself, too. Just go. So, yeah, you know, it features a story arc of the character Mr. Poopy Butthole. And just watch their fucking reaction. It's great.
Did you see the post credit scene? Birdman?
No, I didn't actually.
Yeah, he's like a cyborg.
Really?
And that girl he was with, I think, can't remember her name.
Fuck that bitch.
Yeah, who got married to?
Yeah.
They turned him into a thing, and he's gonna hunt down Rick.
We shouldn't have lost Sarah Lynn on BoJack Horseman. We should have lost her instead.
Right.
Just saying, people. But anyway, I dug the premiere a lot. You know, it was fun. It was a bit too dark for my tastes, to be honest. But I mean, like...
It's Rick and Morty.
It definitely is. And, you know, right now, there's a lot of, you know, hype going around it. Like, myself, I was looking up where the nearest fucking Shoney's was. And I got to say, once again, man, it really disappoints me that those are down in the South and not
like
in
like a fucking Denny's.
I still want to go. I mean, come on. Rick it's likes like it. Maybe I'll Shoney's? Like it. Yeah, I want to go to a Shoney's. We'll go do a road trip to Kentucky.
Go to fucking Kentucky.
People who live in Kentucky don't want to go to Kentucky. Sorry to our Kentucky listeners. Sorry to our Kentucky listeners.
You know what Kentucky's like? Horrible. Sorry to our Kentucky listeners.
Not as bad as Nebraska. Sorry, Nebraska listeners. All none of you. But, yeah. You know.
Corn.
I don't know. I think the idea of just, you know, this whole premiere, I liked it. And again, the humor was very on point. My personal favorite line in the whole episode was, it's trying to like use Disney bucks at Caesar's Palace. I don't know why that was just one of the funniest lines of the whole episode. But one of the things that's been going on is in 1998, when the movie Mulan came out, Disney used to do a lot of promotional stuff with McDonald's. Disney and McDonald's are very, you know, close, and they would do a lot of, you know, promotional things together. And apparently one of the things, and I never remembered this, but they did a dipping sauce for the Chicken McNuggets.
God.
Called Szechuan Dipping Sauce. And I guess it was like a teriyaki-style dipping sauce. It was really good, apparently. And one of the reasons that in the episode, Rick goes in his own memory to 1998 to try the dipping sauce again because he loved it so much. So, since then, and it literally happened that evening before midnight, I went on different McDonald's posts, bring back the Szechuan dipping sauce, bring back the Szechuan dipping sauce, bring back the, can you take a guess what the next word is? Yes, dipping sauce. But a lot of people have been talking about that. People made petitions on change.org to bring back a dipping sauce. And currently, McDonald's has responded and said, we will consider it. Now, this is the interesting thing. Next year is going to be the live-action Mulan remake.
Oh, come on.
Well, Disney does that with a lot of things. They're doing like remakes of everything. It's whatever. And there's been good feedback for almost all of it, so that's kind of cool.
If they bring back the friggin' dipping sauce, do you think they'll at least give a nod to Rick and Morty?
Maybe. You never know. But the thing is this. Disney and McDonald's are no longer doing things together, if you notice. They haven't had a partnership in years. Could this movie be, or, you know, could the dipping sauce be what brings back this relationship? I doubt it.
Rick and Morty.
Although it would be funny just to see, you know, new Szechuan dipping sauce. Don't connect it to Mulan or anything.
A few years ago, they would have done a Rick and Morty toy line, probably.
I don't see. What, at McDonald's?
Years ago.
Are you kidding?
If they do with the fucking penguin, they would do Rick and Morty.
Wait, what penguin?
Danny DeVito's sex addict penguin?
There's a difference between that and a TV MA show where a character's catchphrase is, I don't give a fuck, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't see that happening
alcoholic
whatsoever.
Grandfather.
Yeah, come on. With the new Happy Meal, you get a little mini flask with Rick's fucking face on it.
Drooling.
Come on. But yeah, I mean, I like the idea, you know, seeing this happen. It's kind of cool that, you know, the Rick and Morty fan base is that vocal that they can get something done like this to affect...
Overnight.
Yeah, and it was literally within like a 48-hour span, there was an answer.
We can't get a petition to get fucking like decent, you know, health insurance, but we can get fucking dipping sauce.
A lot of people are saying that. I'm one of those people, but I just find it so bizarre and interesting that this actually kind of happened. So if it actually goes through, man, the power of that, you know, TV show, like, it's really...
Szechuan dipping sauce.
Szechuan fucking dipping sauce.
We should hit the drive-thru and see if they had the Szechuan dipping sauce.
Maybe, you know, well, I mean, they probably get that every fucking day now. Yeah. Like, they've gotten that for like a week. Could you imagine being that, you know, person working at McDonald's behind the drive-thru window? No, we don't.
Welcome to McDonald's, can I help you? Yes, you have the Szechuan dipping sauce? No, we don't.
Spitting his food. Oh, jeez, Rick. I don't know.
I wonder if anyone's actually going down like a Rick impression, like, you gotta...
Oh, yeah. There's most likely at least one person that did it. Or I could even see Justin Roiland himself being the one doing that.
Oh, my God, that'd be hilarious.
He would be the one that gets away with doing it. But, yeah, I just think the idea of it even happening is crazy. It's absolutely fucking nuts.
Good for them, though.
Absolutely. And now, you know, going away from... those kind of shows, you know, animated, but over to live action. Fucking awful segue, Pete. But Preacher Season 2 is coming back this year, and they just released this week a 30-second teaser trailer for the show. And it's, you know, set to Dexy's Midnight Runners Come on Eileen. And I watched it. I dug the hell out of it because it gave it more of a humorous tone. This season is going to be, I think, them going to New York City. It's their road to New York. Mm. Season 3 will be New York. I kind of like that. It's then, you know, implementing different elements of the later issues of the book, which, hey, if they do it, they do it, and that'll be awesome. But I think my major complaint, and I still haven't watched the last episode of Preacher, it didn't rely on the black humor that, you know, the comic had. Mm-hmm. It was too. It tried to be a serious TV show,
like with Walking Dead,
with a character named Arseface. I'm sorry, you can't get away with that kind of stuff, and try and treat it like it's serious. That's why when I saw the trailer, I think Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, they both heard. They're like, man, people really did not like the tone of that.
Seth Rogen's funny.
Yeah, Seth Rogen is very funny, and actually, Seth Rogen. Didn't put this in the notes, but Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg are actually working on a live-action adaptation. I believe it's going to be a TV series, don't quote me on that, of the Robert Kirkman comic Invincible.
Nice. Invincible. Oh, I heard something about that, yeah.
Invincible, of all things, man. I like that. I think that's... That could be...
That's a dark comic, too,
kind of. It could be interesting because that kind of series has humor. Could it utilize that? You know what I mean? And we've never even seen, you know, Seth... He's done it with Green Hornet, but not, you know, like a superhero show. He hasn't really tackled that kind of thing. Could it work? We don't know. But honestly, really, fingers crossed, because I want to see a Preacher show as good as the comic, because I stand by this. Preacher is my favorite comic book I've ever read in my life.
Wow.
It's really high praise when I say that, in my life. Because I've read a lot of comics. I have a lot of free time, but, you know. Such is life. Now, Mike, since the last time we talked, a lot of stuff has been going on with The Walking Dead. The series finale just happened. Season's over. Season finale. Oh. Yeah. So, Mike, what happened on the episode? Regale us with the story of what happened.
Long story short, literally long story short, you know, all this buildup for the entire season, they finally fought Negan. Rick and Carl down on their knees.
Well, not Rick and Morty. Ah, oh, jeez.
Let's take a little step back a little bit. So Negan captured Sasha.
Right.
And Eugene gives her pills, suicide pills. She takes them, and Negan doesn't know this, loads into her coffin to, you know, present her to Rick, to use kind of as bait, whatever, some kind of motive. Negan has on her flatbed truck, opens the coffin, Sasha pops out, tackles Negan down, and tries to bite him. Then all hell breaks loose.
All hell breaks loose.
And there was this one group that Rick...
And Morty?
No, stop saying that. That one group that Rick, got on his side, so he thought, but they turned on him, and turns out they're working for the Saviors. And they turned on Rick and them. And so anyway, Negan gets them, and he's getting ready to kill Carl, and all of a sudden a fucking tiger jumps out of nowhere and bites somebody in the neck, a Savior.
Holy shit, really?
Starts ripping his throat out, and Negan's like, oh shit, they got a tiger, and starts running away. And
well, we got a Hulk.
Maggie and her new group runs in, and... Tiger's still chopping people away. Only the bad guys, which confused me, because, like, how does this tiger know who the bad guys are?
The tiger knows morality.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't... That kind of, like... The whole season finale, I'm like, now, how the fuck does this tiger know who's who? Like, what happens?
Whose side is he on?
I would have laughed if it fucked up and just jumped on Daryl, ripped his face off, and you're like, oh, well, that's how Daryl dies, everybody.
Tiger.
And just kind of keeps on carrying on like nothing happened.
I don't know. I mean, I think stuff like that... Yeah, that's a plot point. That kind of is a weird thing. You know, you notice that you're like, wow, wait a minute.
Hasn't Tiger knew who to kill?
So what else happened?
And that was the end of the episode.
So just a gigantic explosion of an ending.
Basically, then Negan's at the end, very last scene, says, we're going to war. Has all the Saviors in front of him.
That's such a great ending for that kind of thing, because you want to make him the
big
bad.
It was a good ending. It wasn't a cliffhanger. Negan said, we're going to war. Everyone knew that was happening. And
right.
Now it's just going to be... months of people speculating, not even speculation, they know they're going to war. People aren't going to be hounding them like, what's happened, what's going on, you know. It's cool. I think I'm glad they ended it like that. It was nice, subtle ending.
Now, Mike, you told me a rumor of what's going to happen with future seasons.
Time jump. They're going to either going to jump 2 to 3, what, you know how they do their mid-season finale,
right?
Most likely what's going to happen is, you know, that Negan and Rick fight, Rick gets his leg broke, and
Rick Flair,
quiet yo. Then,
now you know how
anyway,
my dad feels.
They capture Negan and put him in a jail, and they're probably going to flash forward like 2 to 3 years of him in prison.
All right.
And Carl's going to be like older, they said. And possibly maybe replace Chandler Riggs.
Really?
As an older adult.
Huh.
Because yeah, I guess he's like 16 on the show, maybe get a younger kid, or, you know, younger person, because we're old as fuck.
We are. We really are.
We're 28 now.
Makes sense. Well, I'm 28. You're 28 now?
Pushing it. 29th. At East Coast Comic Con, April 29th and 30th. Jesus at the Meadowlands Expo Center.
So now, in Secaucus, New Jersey, at the Meadowlands Expo Center, 20...
9th and 30th.
There we go. I wanted to give you the hot tag. Now, before we segue into the Chris Claremont interview, Mike, I've been on a humongous X-Men binge for the past few months. As I'm sitting here with my X-Men patch on one arm and my Deadpool patch on the other.
What's on your breast?
Oh, Run the Jewels, but that's okay. A completely different thing. But they just relaunched it, made it super easy for people, you know, to check out the books and honestly just jump onto the X-Men because it's smart. You want to do that, you know? And they are, they relaunched it with X-Men Prime, right? And it's going to be featuring, you know, it featured like Mark Guggenheim and different people, mainly the writing staffs between X-Men Gold and X-Men Blue. There we go. And for yourself, you told me you want to get into the X-Men.
Mm-hmm.
Now is the time to get in. Problem is, it's Marvel, so the introduction issues, number ones of all these things, are, of course, $5.
Jesus.
But on the positive side, when you get your digital issue, it comes with 3 other books for free. So
that's
whatever.
Cool.
But anyway, I digress. Kevin Gill. But I think the idea, you know, that they're doing this...
Never mind. Keep going.
I like the idea. I think the reboot is... It's making it easier. It's making it... so much easier for the average, you know, reader to get in, because X-Men mythos is one of the most complicated fucking things you'll ever read. And as a matter of fact, they have 5 pages in X-Men Gold number 1 devoted to recapping the history of the X-Men. 5 pages, and it's a dense read.
Yeah.
It tells you everything from the creation of the X-Men group all the way to the Inhumans versus X-Men event that ended last month.
Jeez.
Yeah. 5 pages, and there's so much reading. So much reading.
That's kind of cool, though.
It is cool. It's a good way to get the people in. And we just, you know, I just read the other night X-Men Gold. I really dug it. It's, you know, focusing heavily on Kitty Pryde being the leader. Kitty Pryde being the leader of the X-Men. And it focuses very heavily on how she's a pedophile, meaning she was married at one point to... she was engaged, sorry, to Star-Lord, Peter Quill, and she was in a long relationship with Peter Rasputin, Colossus.
Wow.
So I'm wondering...
A lot of Peters in the Marvel Universe.
I'm wondering when the time is that she tries to hook up with Spider-Man. Because it has to happen now.
She's a Peter dater. She loves the Peter.
She's a Peterphile.
She loves the Peter.
She sure does. But a lot of...
Peters, Star Peters, Web Peters.
Exactly.
Spider Peters.
A lot of stickies. Anyway.
We're idiots.
We are. But, you know, I like the idea that they're even going, you know, with this route for Kitty. Because she is a great character. And I'm surprised we haven't seen much. I don't think the character's made an appearance, but Lockheed the Dragon doesn't show up in these, I believe. I have to reread it, because, like, I actually do want to reread these. They're really fun books. But, yeah, if you're out there and you're at your local comic shop, go pick them up. X-Men Prime number 1, and then X-Men Gold number 1, and... next week, this upcoming Wednesday, is the launch of X-Men Blue. So, fingers crossed. I mean, as far as I know, none of these titles, by the way, are locked into the Secret Empire storyline that's going to be going on, the big event, which is cool because they openly said, hey, we're not going to be having a major event for a while now after Secret Empire.
That's good.
So, fingers crossed, because I really fucking hate tie-in books. I really hate tie-ins.
I know.
So, now before we get into... end of the show, we have a little interview with X-Men legend, comic book royalty, in my opinion, one of the greatest comic book writers in the history of the medium. This is my interview from back in October, but finally getting it up released now.
October.
Yeah, good old days. But an interview with comic book legend Chris Claremont. And that interview starts right
now.
We are joined right now with legendary X-Men writer Chris Claremont. Chris, how are you doing today?
So far, so good. And you?
Pretty good, pretty good. Flubbing my words, just a hair. You're not going to hear that in the audience, but just a little. Anyway, you had an extensive run on the X-Men from 1975, I believe, until 1990, correct? 91, there we go. First
16 years and change.
Absolutely.
I rounded out to 17, but...
what was it like, you know, working on that title for so long, to be able to do so much?
Hell of a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. I'm actually currently reading the run. I'm up to 1985 at the moment, and...
well, a lot of good stuff yet to come.
Oh, yeah. I just finished the Bill Sienkiewicz run. Now, the thing about Sienkiewicz was his art style evolved into this absolutely insane, trippy, psychedelic kind of feel to it, like very techno-oriented a little bit. Mm-hmm. What was it like watching his style evolve, you know, from Neil Adams inspired with Moon Knight and then coming over to yours and pretty much just saying, you know what, I'm going to do it my way?
Well, I think it fulfilled every expectation I had for the New Mutants, in the sense that they're young, impressionable, adolescent, which means you try anything. And more importantly, their lives are defined by their emotions. And Bill's art, especially as it evolved over the course of his run on New Mutants, was exquisite at visually epitomizing the emotional structure, conflict, balance, imbalance of the characters.
Right.
And at the same time, he was also wonderful at just the genesis of not only of showing existing characters in unexpected ways, which just the way he would treat, for example, Rain and her 13-year-old realities and fantasies, but obviously the introduction of Warlock.
Yes, absolutely.
Which, in my estimation as a writer, but also as a reader, was like a game changer.
Absolutely.
He was the first character whose physicality was a literal evocation of his subtext.
Right. Now, with your writing paired with Bill's visuals of Warlock, what was it like working on that character, like, you know, writing the character himself?
An incredible amount of fun.
Absolutely.
I mean, it was a case where you actually had a real ongoing and progressive synergy of the writer and the penciler in tandem. I could toss anything, concept, structure, plot, character moment, at Bill, knowing that I didn't have to tell him how to do it, because whatever he would come up with would be so far removed from any conception I had, but at the same time was so totally right for the moment and the character. It was just a delight.
Now, one of the characters that you helped mold, you know, he wasn't your creation, but with your writing ability, you made him your own. What was it like evolving the character of Wolverine into, like, the mega powerhouse
Actually,
he is today?
Totally a totally natural thing. For me, as the writer, as the person who was forming and structuring and presenting his life, every step along the way for him just grew organically. If Warlock is the epitome of chaos, Logan in many respects is the epitome of almost classical structure.
Now, with speaking, you know, going towards the movies and whatnot, one of your characters is going to be eventually making his big screen debut in his own standalone film.
God willing, and the Crypt Don't Rise. Unless Deadpool does another $200 billion in box office.
Personally, I think Channing was a perfect choice so far for the character. He has the visual look to him.
I think Channing is the ideal person to play. I believe Paul Greenglass is directing it.
I believe so.
Which is wonderful. And I won't complain about the film story since I wrote it.
Absolutely.
Whether that's what shows up is a whole different... That's a Hollywood question. That's probably in Simon's hands, Kinberg's hands, but at least at this stage, fingers crossed.
Now, I know you can't tell us what, you know, the movie would be about, but let's go to the secondary choice.
2 hours?
True, true, true.
Unless, of course, they're going by Avengers or... Dark Knight rules, and then it'd be 2.5 hours.
What would be your choice for, like, a secondary Gambit story to bring to the big screen?
Oh. Well, I suspect there would be a disconnect, because my vision of Gambit is defined by my work on Gambit and my concepts of Gambit.
Right.
And there are, since I moved aside, stepped aside from the X-Men canon shortly after his introduction, a lot of the reader genesis material was produced by Fabian and others. So I would think for people looking at Gambit stories, they derive from the comics, they would go to that source as much as mine. My instinct is always, if I was going to do an arc of films with Gambit as the centerpiece, I would like to try and go in original and different directions. It's, for example, my wish fulfillment on the X-Men would be that the Mr. Sinister film, which I believe is the next one on the pipeline.
Logan, yes.
No, not Logan. I'm talking about X-Men.
Yeah, but the Logan movie is going to be Mr. Sinister, from what I've heard.
God.
Yeah.
Well, I would set it in 2017. And I would establish Jean as head of the school. You could have Patrick Stewart in the background, but bring in Famke Janssen. But also now introduce Rachel as her daughter, now that we have Scott back and as well.
I was actually going to ask you, what character would you want to see on the screen that you haven't?
No, but
that's
then,
a perfect one.
But do it and have Phoenix. Jean has the memories of her moments as Phoenix. Even if that history has been abolished by Wolverine changing the past.
Right.
She might have some resonance of it in her own mind, but have it focus on Rachel. That way, the audience has no idea how it's going to end, and it becomes a much richer, to me, and more potentially exciting story tapestry to play with. And quite frankly, it allows for the introduction of brand new characters.
Right.
And maybe the reintroduction of existing characters. You could establish, for example, that Quicksilver, because he's so incredibly fast, maybe he ages more slowly. So you could still get away with the fact that he's a 20-something 30 years after we saw him introduced.
Absolutely.
Because otherwise, a 40- or 50-year-old Quicksilver is not an exciting thing.
Right.
But that's just me.
Now, before we go, real quick, what projects do you currently have down the line? You know, how can people, you know, get a hold of them?
Just check chrisclaremont.com. I don't talk about ongoing projects, especially now that I'm working in prose, because to talk about them means that I don't do them.
Absolutely.
So when they're done, when they're ready to go, then I'll be shouting from the rooftops. At the moment, they're still works in progress.
Very cool, very cool. Once again, Chris.
Sort of like asking, what's the plot of the Gambit film?
True, true.
It's a work in progress. We really don't know.
Sir, it's been a pleasure having you on, and thank you so much for the years and years of wonderful content that you've created for us to consume as fans.
Well, the stock answer is the true answer. I'm not done yet.
Very
hopefully
cool.
Not even close.
I want to see another Nightcrawler. Just saying.
You and me both. But, you know, not up to me. That's a question for the Marvel booth.
We're going to have to send some emails, you know, strongly worded emails to bring those forward.
Well, the problem, I would suspect, at this point in time, given the evolution of the characters within the comic book universe, there seems to be less flexibility and opportunity for mutants and in general and X-Men in particular within the publishing Marvel universe.
Right.
So I don't know, even if one wanted to do something, if that would be feasible in the current continuity. That's, again, why I would say that's actually much more of an Axel question.
Yeah.
Than a creator question. And I suspect they're keeping the answer close to the vest so as to make the stories themselves more exciting and more marketable when they come out. So, mm-hmm. Like I said, this is a Marvel booth question, not a Chris booth question.
Absolutely, sir. Once again, thank you so much. ChrisClaremont.com?
Yeah.
Very cool. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, once again, major thank you to Mr. Chris Claremont for being on the show today and, well, being on the show back in October, but I just never uploaded the interview. But, yeah, major thank you to Chris. We had to find the right time to do it, and I feel now with the relaunch of X-Men, now is the perfect time, you know what I mean? So, once again, big thank you to Chris, and you can actually go to chrisclaremont.com, and you can contact the man himself there. So, chrisclaremont.com. Mike, before we go, how can people get a hold of us on social media?
Well, you can go at the AE Podcast on Twitter, or collectively, or individually, yeah, at buckaroo_Mike.
And at Peter Melnick. Feels a little bit different today. Right. I like this. Now, you can also find us on Facebook. Give us a like-ski at facebook.com/...
Audibly Exquisite.
You can find us on... Instagram. There we go. I had to remember the name of that. You can find us on Instagram at Audibly
Exquisite.
You can find us on the worldwide interwebs at
www.audiblyexquisite.com.
And once again, if you want to listen to this show on your mobile device for all iOS and Android devices, listen on TuneIn Radio, Stitcher Radio, and Podomatic. You can also rate, review, subscribe, and share on iTunes. Spread the word like Nutella. Let people know about this here fine program. You can also support this show in two different ways. Patreon.com/audibly.
Exquisite.
You can do a tiered variety for as low as $2 a month and $50 a month, and it helps support the show, helps keep this show going, rocking, and rolling. And once again, also, you can find another way to support this show. First off, by the way, patreon.com/audibly.
Exquisite.
You can also find us on audibletrial.com/audibly.
Exquisite.
And help support this here fine program. Listen to thousands upon thousands of audiobooks. Myself, Mike, I've been listening to and having read to me The Dark Tower by Stephen King. Yourself?
Batman Returns.
Which isn't on there, but okay. So, once again, audibletrial.com/...
Audibly Exquisite.
And you'll help support this here fine program. So, once again, thank you to the Gunna Geek Podcast Network for having us on your network and giving us the opportunity to release these shows for your ear holes. So, for Peter Melnick, I'm Peter Melnick.
For Mike Norin, I'm Vincent McMahon.
Vincent McMahon, not Vincent Kennedy McMahon, damn it!
I don't even know who I am! Rah.
Have an audibly
exquisite week. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.